Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City, online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Well, hello. Welcome to Sports Talk on a Thursday. We are just giddy that you've decided to join us. If you wanted to hit us up and be a participant in the festivities, well, we conveniently have a very nice way to do that. We refer to it as the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Online, OregonFuelInjection.com for all your diesel needs. Since 1974, a few years ago, they moved into a new facility. And check out their website. It's really well put together, talking about diesel parts, service, performance parts. And they have been the sponsor of our hotline for the better part of a decade now. They've got video, they've got blogs, they've got everything you need to know on West First. Again, Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also follow them on Facebook. Couple of things. Today is National Women and Girls in Sports Day. And the reason I bring that up is I was messing around on Twitter. I saw that, and I was thinking back to when I was a wee bairn, and when I was, you know, you start playing ball, then you get into middle school, and then into high school. And in the middle part of the 1970s, I mean, there was no WNBA. There wasn't even a women's basketball tournament. I mean, you know, I'm thinking at the high school level, there was softball, maybe field hockey, basketball, some track and field. Our school was kind of early on with gymnastics. I remember, I think my sophomore year, all of a sudden they started, because by the way, heavily influenced by the 1972 Olympics and Olga Korbut of Russia. A lot of young girls decided, well, that looks cool. She's an incredible athlete. You know, you had track and field stars, you had tennis players like Billie Jean, then along came Chrissy and Martina, and but I'll tell you the truth, I was probably what you would refer to as a sports snob. You know, the thought of paying attention to women's basketball or anything like that. Ooh, how dare you. And then along came like Nadia Comăneci of Romania, who got the first 10 at the Montreal Olympics in 1976. Of course, seeing Chrissy and Martina in the late 70s was like, yeah, they could kick our ass sideways. Nancy Lieberman at Old Dominion as a ball player, Carol Blazejowski. Trying to think who else I had. You know, it really wasn't until the 80s when FloJo came along and Florence and, you know, Gail Devers and some of the great, you know, gymnasts, Mary Lou Retton of the 84 Olympics. Because, you know, there were no Summer Olympics in 80 because of the boycott, because of the Ruskies had invaded Afghanistan. And do you think that's funny? You lunatic. President Carter decided we no go. And then they paid us back by not coming to the 84 Olympics in L.A. But it was that time. Nancy Lopez, then Nancy Lopez Melton, I believe, just came out of nowhere and just owned the LPGA. She won like 8 tournaments, like of her first 12. And, you know, the tennis players, track and field, really opened my eyes to the fact that what I thought was incorrect. And I'm always curious, like, for those who are big sports fans, maybe from another generation, I mean, one of the things I've had a lot of fun talking about over the years since I moved over here, going on 12 years ago, is when we talked to some of the players, some of the coaches. For example, when we had Haley Cruz on last week, you know, talked about getting out in the community. And, you know, once upon a time, you wondered, like, for young girls, they probably looked up to the same athletes as young boys because women's sports obviously didn't get the kind of coverage. And like tomorrow we'll have Chelsea Gamble Hoffman on. She's the new lacrosse coach. And I'm always going to be curious to talk to her about what she's noticed about engagement with the community and, you know, how they get out and they do clinics and camps and, you know, how a sport like lacrosse has taken root here since it's become a sport at the University of Oregon. And being a Northeaster, you know, you think of Syracuse and Johns Hopkins and Maryland. I had a buddy that went to Hopkins. He was a year behind me. So he comes from Baltimore for Thanksgiving, you know, the first time a lot of the guys who went away to school came back home, and he had all this lacrosse equipment. He was like, yeah, we have to play this. This is a great sport. And we did. And it is. And it was. And it still is. So we're also obviously, I should say, living through a period of Oregon athletics where, you know, this basketball team is off the charts. People are going to be talking about they saw Sabrina in college for eternity and Ruthie and Sabali and, you know, this group and the 5-5 stars who are going to take the baton for next year and, you know, take the court with players like Taylor Chavez and, you know, the great track and field. You know, Raven Rogers is going to have one of those panels up at the new Hayward Field on the tower there. You know, English Gardner in Shout and, you know, all the fantastic athletes that have participated in track and field, all the great softball players. What else am I leaving out? You know, tennis and golf and all that. And, you know, what we have available in the coverage in 2020 compared to when I started following sports or, you know, were participating in high school sports. I mean, the evolution is good. The coverage is great. I mean, there are still some antiquated pea brains, knuckle draggers who are dismissive and don't get it. But for the most part, it's kind of awesome to see. And there's been a lot of good posts on Twitter. Our Twitter again at 953 the score for the station, for the show at Sports Talk 953 for yours. Chiruli, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. There was a small group I noticed. I want to talk because the NBA trade deadline has come and gone. I think it was noon our time, so 3 o'clock back east. And
Beast.
What? Beast of the East?
No, I combined back east.
Beast?
Together. Beast.
I gotcha. The Trailblazers didn't make a move, but I was like, well, what for the people, like, oh, I can't believe they didn't try. I was like, what were they going to do? I mean, who's available? You don't just make a move to make a move. You got to improve your team. I mean, they just acquired Ariza, who really is going to help Mountain defense because they're horrible defensively. People were talking about, well, Whiteside has an expiring contract and you're going to get what for him as a rental. So the only teams that would want Whiteside would be maybe a Boston, who are like, wow, if we get a rim protector and a guy who could score inside, that might put us over the top, get us past the Bucks and into the NBA Finals. Okay, then you're getting the 27th pick in the draft. I mean, if you're going to trade a starter and a quality guy that you might even consider keeping, you've got to at least get the bottom end of the lottery or some, or, you know, even if they want to get a first round pick in 2 or 3 years. But it's like, what are they going to trade? CJ? Lillard? Yeah, right. That'll go over well. You know, Anthony's not going anywhere. Collins obviously isn't playing. Bazemore hasn't panned out.
You could have Ray Borked Carmelo. You could have sent him to the Bucks or to the Lakers to be like,
get
dude,
his title.
Go get a title. Get us just another draft pick. Because if the Blazers are just trying to acquire picks here, their pick will be the one good one. And then the second pick that they get, they can just mortgage off in the future like every other team in the NBA did today, where they just, I think the Onion Sports tweeted out that all 30 teams completed a trade swapping second round picks in 2022, because that's basically what happened today. You just take some things.
The problem with Carmelo is he's such an incredible bargain. You know, they're paying him like an hourly rate, and it's not costing him anything. He doesn't have an expiring contract. They really have one, and he's playing really good ball. He's setting a terrific example. Like when we were talking with Brooke Olsendam, she was like, he really has kind of been the proverbial leopard that changed his spots, because he's been an incredible teammate, understanding, yeah, I'm going to Portland, it's kind of Lillard's team. And he's been fantastic. So there was nothing, and by the way, the best part is a couple people I engaged, well, get, you know, normally you could get somebody and ask them, I mean, what should they do? Trade Whiteside for LeBron? I mean, or Giannis? It's like, you realize it doesn't work that way, right?
And then there are Blazer fans that would be like, ah, I don't know if we really want Giannis. LeBron is a Laker. I don't want to have to root for a former Laker. Two of the best top five at worst players in the NBA right now.
Yeah-ish.
For Carmelo, we could really use the secondary shooting. I think I'd rather keep Melo and Whiteside around than have Giannis. There are people out there that would think that. I guarantee it.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. By the way, feel free to text us. We get a lot of good stuff. Our callers, our texters, those of you who listen, I always say pound for pound, we've got the most informed, entertaining audience in radio. So be a part of it. 3210824. Try us on that newfangled thing these crazy kids like today, that Twitter. At 953 the score again, for the station, for the show, at Sports Talk 953. Bottom of the hour, we'll talk Civil War, we'll talk some hoops with Mike Parker, the voice of the Beavers. But right now, let's get to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. What's up?
Good evening, Steven. What is your gut telling you about Andrew Wiggins, about him coming back for the Warriors next year to win the games with the Golden State Warriors? Do you think he should return from Minnesota?
Return to Golden State?
Just the Warriors next year with Wiggins.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Hey, he's a good player. I don't know if he's ever. I appreciate the call, Steven. I don't know if he's ever panned out as a number one overall. I think you got to go back 4 years to, you know, him having a really big season. When he came out of Kansas, I thought he really was going to be the real deal. And don't get me wrong, he's a really, really good player. As a matter of fact, if memory serves, he is back up over 20 points a game this year. The problem with him is we've never got to see him on a big stage because they've only made the playoffs once, and they got run really, really fast in, I think, 5 games, the only game he was there. I forget what kind of contract he has. I think he maxed out. Yeah, there it is. So he's now a $30 million a year player. And the thing that I like about a guy like Wiggins, though, is he's been around a while, and he's really good, and he's only 24 because he won and dunned. All right, to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, let's get to Nate. Nate, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going great, Steve. Happy Thursday to you. Thanks. Chime in on the trade deadline talk. I got to say, watching giving up Mo Harkless was really rough because I really enjoyed him. I talked to a lot of Blazer fans about him coming to the Clippers, and I was curious. And then this entire season, he's been so much fun. I mean, just the amount of work that kid puts in is incredible. But giving him up and getting Morris from the Knicks and Isaiah Thomas, I kind of wanted to get your take on that. I'm pretty excited just because now we have a true point guard and also a big three that can spread the court more than we already are. So, thoughts?
All right. Thanks a lot, Nate. Harkless was kind of, accurate to say, kind of a love-hate relationship when he was a Blazer because his three-point shooting would disappear for, like, months. I'm not making that up. I mean, the season before last, and I know he had some injuries, he shot, like, 41% from downtown. And then, weird, the year they go to the finals, he shoots 28%. This year, he found the middle at 37%. But what I like about the Clippers, I mean, obviously, I don't like their history because they have none. But with Lawrence Frank, and I know Doc Rivers has input, they're thinking about winning the championship now. And you've got to do that. And Morris is kind of a chucklehead, but he's a really good ball player. So it's an easy deal to make for the big picture. That's a guy who is more of a missing piece to the title puzzle than Harkless for sure. All right, 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Are they picking the All-Star game teams right now?
They're doing this on TNT, so they just picked the starters, and now the jokes are flowing through Twitter as well, but they're doing the reserves right now, and Dame was just picked by LeBron as LeBron's first reserve pick right off the bench. It was very funny watching them get to the very end of the possible starters, and James Harden was just sitting out there, and it just felt like the kid who was getting, quite literally, getting picked last, and they were just kind of like, Giannis and LeBron, like, I'm going to go with the younger Trae Young here. I think I would rather play with him, and you have James Harden, and you try and deal with him taking 45-footers and just chucking up threes and not trying to, you deal with that, man. I don't want it.
By the way, in the history of choosing up sides and the poor boy or girl who gets picked last and, you know, wants to go home and cry. Is this the most first world problem of getting picked last?
Yes.
As one of the 24 best players on the planet?
Yes, it is. This happened in the NHL as well, where they did the same thing, but obviously with NHL rosters, the teams are much bigger, and the process took a lot longer because they didn't just do it like, okay, let's try and get it done in a half hour so we can talk about the rosters and get everything done with. It was like, let's take 2 hours, and we'll pick all of the teams, and we'll talk to all of the players. And Logan Couture, the first year they did it, was the last person picked, and they like gave him a car. And then 1 year, Alex Ovechkin was sitting in the green room waiting with a piece of paper sign that said, "Please pick me last. I need the car." Rooting to be picked last because he just wanted a free car, which is great. But yeah, for these NBA guys, oh, I don't think anybody cares.
Well,
I mean, they do care, but like they shouldn't care.
I really don't think they do. I think you could make that kind of a blanket statement. All right, statement. 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Tomorrow, by the way, we'll have a shorter show. I'll be at Trev's Sports Bar and Grill out on Franklin Boulevard across the street from Matthew Knight Arena. I'll be doing the show from 3 to 5, then the women's pregame brought to you by Jerry's Home Improvement Center from 5 to 5:30. They're going to hustle on over to watch the Pac-12 leading Ducks take on Arizona. It's a 6 o'clock tip, and Bev Smith is in Canada. She is providing TV analysis. They decided because of the Olympics, the national women's basketball team are playing their games to try and get qualified. And of course, Bev is not only a former Olympian for the Canadian national team, also a coach, and she is providing analysis on the national broadcast in Canada, the coverage of the Canadian national team. How cool is that? Yeah, I was talking with her, and she was like, so would it be okay if I missed those two games? Well, what are you doing? That. I'm like, yeah, I think I could see the point there.
Do you think she's going to come back and kind of big time you and be like, tiny little radio show? I was on CBC in Canada. I don't know if I've got time for KUGN over here.
She's going to show up to the first pregame show and just want a different chair and new headsets. Do I just make sure Steve doesn't make eye contact?
I need 6 glasses of water, 3 with ice, 3 without.
Shaved ice.
Various levels of sparkling between all 6. Some no sparkling water, cold sparkling water.
And like I said, and I'll talk to Steve if I have to, but tell him not to make direct eye contact. All right, before we take a break, I want to remind you, 95.3 The Score, we present to you the world's largest indoor garage sale. It'll hit up on March the 28th. Takes place 9 a.m., 4 p.m. at the Lane County Fairgrounds. Good opportunity. Spring cleaning, get it done. Or if you're just like, yeah, this stuff's got to go. But you need to hustle. These spots go pretty quickly. Booth space starts at $65 for a 10 by 10 spot. That's 10 feet by 10 feet, by the way. Booth space, 10 inches by 10 inches. It'd be like Spinal Tap when they had the wrote down what they needed when they were going to do that kind of mythological or mystical. They wanted an 18 foot by 18 foot, and they made it 18 inches. By 18 inches.
What is this, a garage sale spot for ants? It needs to be at least 2-3 times
bigger. Ridiculous.
This is ridiculous.
Well, you made the inches sign and not the feet sign. So there you go. Your fault. So you need to contact the KUJZ front desk to reserve your 10-foot by 10-foot space. Admission day of is only $2. So KUJZ 953 The Score, world's largest indoor garage sale, March 28th. Lane County Fairgrounds. All right, break time. We'll come back. We'll have an update, and then we'll talk some Civil War with Mike Parker coming at you next, 95.3 The Score. That's Ian Fitzsimmons of ESPN talking about the pickup of Iguodala and the impact on the East race alongside Jimmy the Butler did it. Pat Riley, master architect, doing it again in Miami as we welcome you back to Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. We'll get Mike Parker in here in a moment. I didn't see it. I just saw a highlight. Somebody posted it on Twitter. So on the Today Show this morning, the home run king, Hank Aaron, was on, and he was asked if the Astros' punishment fit the crime, and he said, no, I don't. I think whoever did that should be out of baseball the rest of their life. Way to go, Hammer. The hammer drops the hammer. So, well done there. Not happening at this point, but anyway, gang. Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Always feel free to text us, and doesn't always have to be about the topic we're discussing. I'm always interested in what you guys are interested in. 321-0824. Well, I'm willing to research and discuss an issue outside the box, but for right now, we'll lock it all down. Look ahead, Saturday night, Civil War up at Gill. Both teams enjoying a little downtime. Crazy to think the Pac-12 tournament begins 4 weeks from Wednesday. He's the voice of Oregon State baseball, football, basketball. Host of the Joe Beaver Show with John Warren on 1240 Joe Radio up north. Noon till 2 weekdays on Twitter at MEPOSU. Mike Parker, how are you doing these days, my friend?
Well, doing pretty well, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Just tired. Last night I emceed the football recruiting dinner signing day celebration event in Portland, and then had early work to do in Portland, and then come back and all those things you just went through, the Joe Beaver show, that happened. And I've been looking forward all day long to talking with you, but I'm kind of glad there isn't a game to do tonight and that we have a little extra time before the Civil War.
So if things go silent, should I give a Mike? It's me.
Yeah, you know, honestly, that would never happen with you, Steve, but it could happen in other contexts. But I think I can stay alert for a few more minutes.
All right, I'm counting on you. You know,
okay,
I get down what I call the rabbit hole, and I came across an interview you did with Billy Musgrave a few years back. I learned something. I know you're always been a long, long, long time baseball fan, so fill in this blank. Not long after you graduated from the U of O, you were the voice of the Eugene Emeralds?
Yes, that's correct. And the Billy Musgrave you refer to, just to make sure, I hope you clarified, it's not the Cal offensive coordinator or the former Oregon quarterback. Great. People have asked me, man, somebody asked me the other day, I heard your interview with Bill Musgrave, and I thought they were talking about an interview I did with a quarterback back in 1990 or whatever. No, so it was Billy Musgrave, different family altogether, talking to me as part of an Oregon State archival series. So that's good research on your part to have come across that, Steve. I appreciate it. But yes, I did the Eugene Emeralds home games only in 1983, and I did those games that year for $0. It came on the eve of the season. Bob Beban found a radio station the night before the season started, and I'd been pestering him, saying, Bob, I want to get into baseball play-by-play. I want to do your games. We don't have a radio station. We don't have a radio station. But I bugged him. I kept calling. We still don't have a radio station. Finally, the night before the season, he said, I've got a radio station for home games only. That's the good news. The bad news is I can't pay you anything. Do you still want to do it? And I said, absolutely, I do. And then Bob made good on that in 85, 86 when I had two very enjoyable years, and he took good care of me in those seasons, but I did do it in 83 for nothing. So parts of three seasons I was blessed to do Eugene Emeralds baseball and had a great time doing it.
Awesome. So, hey, you invested in yourself. Worked out.
Well, in a very real sense, yeah. And, you know, I remember thinking, hey, I worked then a couple of years later for Joe Buzis, the late owner of the Portland Beavers, who moved the team to Salt Lake City. And he would see how happy I was doing the games and then come into the office after a game doing Pacific Coast League baseball, the AAA baseball. It was a lot of fun in that league. And Joe would say, you ought to be paying me rather than me paying you for it. And I didn't quite go that far, but I was willing to work 1 year for nothing.
That's awesome. By the way, one more dip into that pool, because only a sports nut can appreciate what I'm about to bring up. I know mine. It's early July 1965. My dad's best buddy, by the way, still friends to this day, biggest Cardinal fan ever, took us to see Bob Gibson pitch against and beat the Mets. I was four. So you're born and raised in Hacienda Heights in Southern California, and you talked about your first MLB game, and you had some pretty vivid memories.
Yeah, I do. It was June 17th, 1966. And I know that you, growing up in a major league market, have a distinct memory of your first, and so do I. June 17th of 66, it was the last day of school in Hacienda Heights in elementary school. The second grade had ended that day, and that night I knew I was going to my first major league ball game. Gaylord Perry against Don Sutton. Sutton, a rookie. 1-1 tie into the eighth, and McCovey hammered a three-run homer into the right field pavilion. Giants 4, Dodgers 1. And I cried all the way from Chavez Ravine to Hacienda Heights because, you know, it was my first game. The Dodgers lost. I'm crying all the way home, and my dear late dad said, son, we'll go to another game and they'll win it. There's about 140 left this year. It's going to be okay. And the Dodgers ended up winning the pennant that year. But I cried because I just thought, how can these things be? And I ended up getting to see Koufax pitch twice in person that year, wow, including his last game, his very last game, game two of the 66 World Series. I was in Dodger Stadium when Jim Palmer shut out Sandy in his last game 6-0.
Wow. Palmer, Koufax, Sutton,
Gaylord Perry, Don Sutton.
You just named four Hall of Famers.
Yeah, and you know, you had no idea. And I remember, though, Steve, I must have had a little bit of an eye for talent, because when I went to my first game, I really didn't know who that number 24 out in center field for the Giants was running around. But I said to my dad early in the game, I said, "Dad, who's that? Who's that number 24 for the Giants? He looks pretty good." My dad, "Son, that's Willie Mays." And I didn't know what that meant then. I'm glad to know what it means now.
Yeah, some clarity. We're talking with the voice of the Beavers, Mike Parker. So the Wednesday, get to hoops. The Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I watched on Fox Sports 1, Oregon State beat San Jose State. It was in Vegas, and I know the Spartans aren't very good, but in like 20 minutes, I saw Kyler Kelly had a bunch of blocks with Tinkle and Ethan Thompson and some depth. But would I be accurate to say so far that if you were going to describe this season, frustrating, disappointing, because I thought they would do more than they have till now?
I would say frustrating is an accurate word, Steve. And that game that you referenced, that San Jose State team, as terrible as they looked that night, lost on a last-second shot at San Diego State a game or two before that. I mean, they've had a crazy year, and it's hard to figure what's going on in the Pac-12 and in college basketball, it seems, from week to week. Hard to predict these results from week to week. So, yeah, I mean, I think sitting here at 3-7 in the league, I thought the Beavers would be in better shape. But the three wins give enough hope that they're capable, I think, of doing more down the stretch of the season. Five of the last eight are at Gill, so I still think they have a chance to make a move. They need to win Saturday night. They certainly felt like they needed to win at Cal after beating Stanford. It felt like some momentum may be generated, and then they lose a heartbreaker to Cal.
Yep.
But Oregon also split on that trip. It's hard. It's difficult to get a feel for what's going on, but I think the Beavers' wins at Colorado, at Stanford, at home against Arizona, show what they are capable of, and with a veteran group that I think can get hot, still have a chance to make a run in the regular season and make some noise in the Pac-12 tournament, too.
Yeah, I want to get to Trace Tinkle, who, you know, he was part of the team as a freshman who broke the long NCAA drought. He's having another great season. He rebounds. He's unselfish. I mean, you've seen some really good players who went to the NBA your 20-plus years calling the Beavs. How high up the list is this young guy?
Well, just because of the complete game that he plays, and you mentioned, I think, the greatest quality about him as a coach's kid. He's selfless. Now, there may be at times people see, well, they see him maybe go one-on-one, and he'll get himself into the paint and maybe at times force some things, but that's never out of, I've got to get my points and I've got to raise my draft stock or whatever else. He's doing everything he can game in and game out to help the team win. So they need him to score. They need him to be a playmaker and rebound, and he leads the Pac-12 in steals. And so, you know, he and Peyton Pritchard are still they're very much in this showdown Saturday night in Corvallis, very much in the Pac-12 Player of the Year conversation. I think Peyton's probably the front runner right now, but whether strong finish Trace can get back in that conversation. I've just enjoyed his relentless competitiveness game in and game out and doing whatever it takes to help the team to win, whether take a charge or go coast to coast off the glass. He can do a lot of things well, and I think he's an intriguing prospect at the next level, even though he's kind of a tweener in size and he's not terribly quick, fast. He's just a worker that I think is going to work his way into a job at the next level, too.
Couple final thoughts for the voice of the Beavs, Mike Parker. You know, I mentioned earlier where you hail from. I'd imagine you have a pretty special place reserved for the freshman, Jared Lucas, from Hacienda Heights.
Yes.
Had the game of his life against Stanford last week. What could you tell us about his game and how he's coming along as a freshman?
that was encouraging to see. And yes, there have only been two athletes in the 21 years plus I've been doing Beaver sports that have hailed from my one-year alma mater. I moved to Cottage Grove late in my ninth grade year. Hacienda Heights to Cottage Grove was a bit of a change in life, but it was a good one. I'm grateful that it happened, but it was different.
Yeah, and for
two guys... Two guys have come from that school. Daniel Drayton was a defensive back for the Beaver football team from that school, and now only the second through all these years, Jared Lucas. But it's been enjoyable to talk to Lucas because we do, even all these years later, I'm talking about being a freshman in 72, 73, and that's a long time ago, freshman at Los Altos High School, but the gym is the same that I played in, that he played in, and some of the people that I knew, his father, who was his head coach at Los Altos High School, knew and said they stayed around for a long time. So it's been fun to compare notes, and the neighborhood, some of the places are still there that I frequented, so did he. And that's surprising to me, given all the years that have gone by, but it's kind of fun not only to have that connection, but to see what he did, as you referenced, Steve, at Stanford. That was a guy that he's capable of being in that. Oh, think about this. In the history of the state of California, only two players have scored more points than he did in the entire state in high school basketball history in California.
Whoa.
So the guy can score. I mean, he's the Southern California all-time leading scorer, and in the entire state's history, only two others have scored more than him. So he can get it going. He really hadn't yet, but I think the game at Stanford might create maybe a run here down the stretch that can help the Beavs win some more games as he did at Stanford last Thursday.
And one final thought I always like to wrap, stepping outside my Eugene bubble. I mean, we know what this rivalry means. This will be game 353. Obviously, you know, last year OSU swept a future Sweet 16 mm-hmm. team. But in talking with the guys, your observations, what kind of an Oregon team did the Beavs expect to square off with Saturday night?
Well, I was sorry to hear about the Francis Okoro situation, that he won't be able to make the game and returning home to attend the funeral of his father. That's a very sad story. And with the injury to Dante as well, I mean, Oregon, I think the Beavs have a chance. Now, both are sad news. I mean, a funeral and an injury, that's not good stuff. But in respect to the game Saturday night, I think the Beavs with Kyler Kelly and even some of the work of Trey Stinkle inside may have, and they may even go with Twin Towers at time with Roman Silva at 7'1" and Kelly at 7 feet. I think they can have an interior presence that can help them win this game at Gill. The Beavers have won the last two at Gill. They've won three of the last four in the series. So I think they feel confident about having a good game against a team that has had a good year. I mean, Oregon's season's a little strange here of late, too. Not quite like the Beavers in terms of the dramatic swings, but still some losses. They're 6-for-30 in the second half. I think I heard you Monday, Steve, say something to the effect of, in Oregon, still missing shots
right.
at Stanford or something like that. It was that kind of night for them after the Beavers had won there a couple of days earlier. This league's hard to figure. I do want to say something about the Civil War to you as a recommendation for down the road, whether you've talked to him about this already, I don't know. But do you know Bud Withers at all? Have you had Bud on the show?
I have not. The name I do know.
Okay, now Bud has written, it's almost completed, he's written a book on the Dick Harter era at Oregon. I don't know what the working title is. He hasn't released that.
Huh.
But the book will be out, I think, at the start of the next basketball season, encompassing that amazing Dick Harter 7-year era, the Kamikaze Kids and so on, and Ronnie Lee and Greg Ballard. And he's interviewed a lot of people for the book. And he told me in an interview I did with him on our Joe Beaver show recently that he did an entire chapter, because he had to, on the Civil War games during that time frame, which Bud, who chronicled them, said he's never seen anything like the intensity and rivalry and passion of the games between Oregon and Oregon State in the 70s, and Harter, Ralph Miller. And there are some great, great stories. And so he might be a guy to get on your future list when the book gets closer to coming out, because I think Oregon fans, of which you know, have legions of them in your area, would enjoy kind of going down memory lane in that era.
No, that would be awesome. I'll make a note of that for sure. I appreciate the heads up. And if you talk to him, say, this guy down south might want to be giving you a call soon.
So. Absolutely, no. In fact, I'll get a number to you for him, and I'm sure he'd be happy to do it. I just think it's a story that Oregon fans will really enjoy, just kind of revisiting, you know, what Harder did in the 70s and some of the memorable wins over UCLA and the battles with the Beavers. I saw a lot of those in person. And while Saturday night at Gill may not have that same passion and intensity, it's always a great game, and I'm honored to get to call another one. But I know fans will enjoy looking back at that era with Bud.
Nah, place is going to be rocking. Folks, he's the voice of Oregon State baseball, football, basketball. Host the Joe Beaver with John Warren on 1240 Joe Radio from noon to 2 weekdays on Twitter at MEPOSU. Mike, always my pleasure. Have a great broadcast, and I look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Talk to you soon.
All right, take it easy. All right, great stuff. Good baseball anecdotes. Calling the Emeralds games and going to see Don Sutton, who, by the way, Hall of Famer, pitched about 20 years in the league. That was his rookie year in 1966. Awesome. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up Sports Talk. That's the show we do now, right? On a Thursday, 4 o'clock hour, 95.3 The Score.
95.3 The Score is your sports station. Log on and listen live at 95.3thescore.com. Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guaranty RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guaranty.com.
Any team should be able to retain his services, not just the Red Sox or the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Angels, whoever it may be. To me, every team should be able to provide their fans with a generational player and be able to do it within the financial confines or just the financial reality of Major League Baseball.
Carl Ravich, ESPN on the Mookie Betts deal. For the Blue Sox, as we welcome you back to Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score. I was trying to think. Eric Weddle announced his retirement. He was a really good safety for a while. First, he was a draft pick out of Utah in the 07 draft by the Chadges. Second round pick, early second round. And I'm thinking, why in my mind do I think that he played against Oregon at Utah? And I'm like, was that the 2003 or 4 team under Suburban Meyer that ended up playing the Ducks? And I was racking my brain. And I think if memory served, they ended up playing Oregon on a Friday and beat them. It was just such a weird situation. They had a guy named Paris Warren who had left the Ducks under bad circumstances, and he had a big game. And lo and behold, I went back and checked it out. I think it was the first year under Suburban Meyer after he left Bowling Green, and they ended up going 10-2 that year, won the Liberty Bowl over Southern Miss, and then the next year was with Alex Smith, they went unbeaten, and at the time, it was like kind of a big deal, you know, a Mountain West team beating a Power 5 league team, but it was Pitt out of the Big East, and Pitt was like, that's my way of saying not very good. And then, ironically, they ran the table. Then when they played the Fiesta Bowl, Meyer had announced he was leaving to take the Florida gig. And so the interim coach that year was Kyle Whittingham, who has now been the coach since. All right. Man, did I just run around in a circle to somehow tie that to Oregon and Suburban Meyer and Eric Weddle, who was a good player. By the way, you know, 6 Pro Bowls, 2-time All-Pro. Good player. Good cracker. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Oh, by the way, I want to get to what we were talking about with Aaron Fentress a little earlier. He wrote a piece in The Athletic about Oregon recruiting, and he went back to 2002. And for those of you who know me, nobody appreciates a good 1.5 gainer down a rabbit hole than I do. Just the title of the article on The Athletic, which I retweeted, Steve. Diction, enunciate. The rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain. The title of the piece: while Oregon scoffs at two-star recruits now, there are some who helped shape the program's future. And, you know, from everybody Pat Chung tonight, who played from 2005 through 2008, he takes us right to J.D. Nelson, was, you know, out of L.A., and, you know, a guy who at the safety position was second on the team in tackles 1 year. And he just was one of those guys who you just watched him. And I think the most accurate way to describe him was he made limited mistakes. He was rarely out of position. He rarely missed tackles. And, you know, he was on that post Harrington team who let down in 2002. He didn't play, but then in 2006, you know, the team that finished so poorly and looked god awful in the Vegas Bowl against BYU. All right, I want to get to that. I still haven't totally chimed in. Nick asked a question on the Crunch Exchange yesterday regarding Mookie Betts, and I'll offer up a theory there. I want to talk about that. Pac-12 action gets started tonight, even though Oregon is not playing, but some big games at the high end of the standings. You know, Colorado's in action. USC at Arizona, that's an ESPN2 game. And that has great game written all over, as does Stanford and Utah. So between Colorado, USC, Stanford, and Arizona, you have those are the rest of the three lost teams in this league in action tonight. So it's with that the Ducks playing, you could basically tune in and root for whatever is best for your team. So you could be greedy, you could be selfish. Go on, do it. We'll give you the green light. All right, that brings us to break time. We'll come back. 5 o'clock hour. Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
Have you ever been to a volcano?